I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Helen.
Good morning. My name is Helen Amanatic. And I'm grateful. I feel grateful and honored to be here. When I first got word that I would be speaking and talk to Greg, and he said the topic was going to be higher powered, I was like, cool, that's something that I know about. And I can remember a time when, to me, higher powered means having a relationship with the God of your understanding. And I can remember for so long that was not important to me at all. Everything else, men, kids, my job, you know, my life was not focused on anything that was spiritual, anything that was God-centered. It was strictly self-centered will only. And I can remember being early on and seeing people in the meetings that appeared to be really spiritual and have a relationship with God. And I would be really envious, and I would look at them, and I doubted that, you know, people could honestly have a powerful relationship with God, because I just couldn't see it. And what happened was I kept coming back, and I decided after years and years of making everything else my higher power, and for me it was always men, because I never felt love and I never felt good about myself. So I used anything and anybody to change my mood. And once the drugs were gone and I woke up, it was like, wow, I don't want to deal with what's going on with me, so I'll use everything else to fill the void. And what happened was there came a time where the other things were no longer working, and everything that I was doing was continuously causing me pain. So I would go to meetings and I would, you know, I would cry, and people would say, you ever thought about praying? Like, what's praying gonna do? When you're going through something, that's the last thing you want to hear. You know, but I had a friend, and people were telling me to pray. You know, ask your higher power, you know, and I'm grateful that the literature talked about finding the God of your understanding in the second step, because unlike other institutions, your choice of God has to be just like, you know, one way only. This is God, you know, God's wrath is this. If you do this, you know, you'll be viewed, you'll be judged. And here you all told me to let my God be loving and caring. And when I first tried to get a relationship with my higher power, it happened like everything else in my life. I wasn't focused. I would only pick up a relationship with my higher power when it was convenient or when I was in a lot of pain. And my sponsor told me, if you continuously work on that relationship, you know, you'll find out when you're in pain, you won't be hurting as often or as intense. And I'll never forget one time I was really going through something, and I got on my knees and I was like, God, if you're real, let yourself be shown to me. And I closed my eyes, I got on my knees, and I got up because I felt something, and it was really unfamiliar, and I continued to run. And to this day, I kind of doubt that was my higher power working through me then, you know, but I had to do more research, and I had to pick up more pain before I actually became willing to get a relationship with God. And I kind of like that movie, Joe, Bruce Almighty. Did y'all see that movie, Bruce Almighty? Well, I've kind of been from one extreme to the other, you know, because I got this relationship with my higher power, who I choose to call God, which is a loving and nurturing relationship, and I went from one extreme to the next. And I got involved in church, and, you know, I started to get in service and picked up a stronger relationship, and my meetings kind of slacked off. And in the literature, it talks about having that going out here on a religious zeal. And you know, I've done that too. And what happened for me was I got stuck. And I got in a place where I kind of felt grandiose. You know what I'm saying? I kind of felt like the program couldn't give me the relationship with the God of my understanding like the church could. But what happened was I started isolating, and on the inside, I felt spiritually weak because I was getting a relationship with God in church, but I didn't have the fellowship. So I didn't feel well balanced, so I had to come back to meetings. And what happened for me, after isolating, I realized that I needed the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to get through it. So I got back in service, started coming back to my meetings. The relationship that I have with my higher power today has changed. I pray on a regular basis. I had an experience that if I had not have been grounded in a relationship with the God of my understanding, I really don't think I'd be clean today. Life as I knew it changed. I lost everything. I walked away from my marriage. I lost my house. And I was basically stripped on the inside. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. But you know what? I never stopped praying. I got on my knees and I cried a lot. I lost like 25, 30 pounds. And I really know today that the only reason that... the God of my understanding will allow me to go through things to bring me closer to Him. So when I really get self-centered, you know, and really think I don't need God, and there'll be some tests. There'll be some tests. And either two things are going to happen. I'm going to get a better relationship with the God of my understanding, or I'm going to go back to doing what I normally do, which is self-centered behavior. And when I was going through this difficult situation, you know, I kind of knew that I would be okay, but as the days go by, I got stronger, you know, I prayed more, and I kept coming to meetings, and I used my support, and I really got through it, you know. A relationship with my higher power today is totally different than what it was when I came in here. And that doesn't mean that I don't go through things, because I do. But I've learned that if I just sit still and pray, that no matter what I go through, I'm going to be okay. And I'm really tired today, y'all. I'm not a morning person. I had an experience yesterday that really, it was an awakening for me. I got up yesterday morning and I passed out. And I had no idea what had happened. And when I got up off the floor, which I don't remember, my friend had told me that he couldn't wake me up. And I went over to the hospital, got some tests done. They did a CAT scan and a chest x-ray and drew some blood, and they couldn't find anything wrong. But the lesson in that was, that's God's way of telling me it's time to slow down. You know, I've been really going a lot, and I have so much going on in my personal life on a daily basis. I got a schedule. I get up, I pray, I take the boys to school, you know, and God gives me the strength to do everything that I have to do, and I don't complain. I'm like, okay, God, you gave me this. Now help me to do what I need to do, you know. But when it comes to a point where you know God is telling you this is what you need to be doing, and my friends tell me, you know, you always stress yourself out, and to me it was a wake-up call. It was God's way of telling me, okay, girlfriend, you need to slow down, you know. And I was so in denial about it because my friend was like, Helen, you're doing too much, you know. And I thank God that when I left from the hospital, I got a clean bill of health. I was able to take the information that he gave me and take a look at it. But I bugged about it, you know. Another thing with the relationship with my higher power is that I get an opportunity to look at things on a different perspective. And because today I know it's not about me. It's about changing my character, you know, and doing things a little bit different. And that's not to say I don't have a lot of things going on in my personal life, because I do. You know, but he gives me the twos and the people, you know, because God works through people. And the theme of this convention is Lost Dreams Awaken, you know. And for me, to have a relationship with the God of my understanding has always been something that I couldn't see, you know. It's a gift. It's truly a gift. I really don't know what else to say except my life has gotten so much better, and I am so grateful, you know, that I had a sponsor who had a loving relationship with the God of her understanding. And today, although Bruce Almighty walked around and saying, I got the power, you know, I have it, but not in an arrogant way. And my will is to, my goal is to pray, you know, to be more God-centered, to get out of myself, because it's real easy for me to get locked up into myself, you know. And to know that, you know, my ultimate goal in life is to be a better person, to be a better person. Because anything, when I do anything that goes against spiritual principles, I don't feel good, you know. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt I've come a long way, because I am not that person I was, you know. I can't look at you and lie. You know what I'm saying? I can't look you in your eyes and lie. You know, the little dishonest things I used to do, I'm just no longer comfortable with that. You know, so I'm just really grateful to be here and to be a part of this convention. And I'm going to sit down, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, Helen. Okay, for our next speaker, we'll have Diane.
Good morning. Thank you. Morning, I'm an addict. My name is Diane.
Hi, Diane.
And I want to, first of all, remember just to thank the committee for making a 12-step call on me and asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. And also to thank the people that love me, that are here to support me, and that are a part of my network. It means a lot that you love me enough to get up this early and be on time. My issues. And I'm going to grab this book because it's our literature. It works how and why. Because when they called me and asked me to share on this topic, it was my friend Jim, and I thought about it, and I said, okay, higher power, and I kind of sat it to the side, and then I emailed him and said, what time am I sharing again? And I didn't really give a lot of thought to it until I got to the convention. And part of the reason why I did that is because I didn't want to get up into myself and start to think that I knew what I was supposed to say. And then I talked to my friend and shared with him, just asked him, you know, which we often do, you know, what do you think about this topic? And just kind of to start to think about it. And this morning I got up and listening to his opinion as like my guide to start, I did my morning meditation, which is part of my routine, get up and, you know, pray and meditate. And then I opened the book and just kind of went to through some of the language in our steps just to kind of look at where we're talking about being higher powered. And what I'm going to try to do now is just kind of tell you my story and just talk about how the higher powered thing relates. You know, I got clean in Southern California. And when I got clean, not an endorsement, but I went through treatment and I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous because I didn't know anybody in recovery. And my story is that I am the only addict in my family. And there are like dozens of us. And I'm the only one. The rest of my family is really straight-laced. They're overachievers and they're anal retentive and they've got all kinds of codependent issues. And they would never use drugs. And up until I was about 18 years old, I was like that. I would never use drugs. How could you use drugs? You know, and then curiosity is what got me here. You know, my curiosity through a man I was dating, it was like, well, you know, what is that? And then I wanted to see him do it. And then when he did it, I was like, oh, let me try it. And it didn't work the first time, and I would think that would have been my clue, right, to stop. And what happened was I was like, no, I want to really feel this. And my story starts there, you know, my addiction starts there, because that night, you know, I went to the Versateller and got the daily limit, and then we went back at 2 o'clock in the morning when the bank's clock changed so we could get the next day's daily limit, and we were back and forth to the dope man that night, and it was a Friday night, and, you know, we did that dope man thing Friday and Saturday and Sunday, and my story is not a weekender story at all. It's like I found crack, and I found cocaine and freebasing, and it was on, and it was like I had afternoon smokeouts, and I had, you know, I didn't do just like Friday and Saturday, and my progression was quick, and it was rapid, and it was merciless. And I went from being like a nice, upstanding member of society to within several years, man, my life was the dope man was my job. You know, he was my trick. You know what I mean? Like I didn't have any kind of street skills. Basically, I mean, what I did was I grew up learning how to manipulate my seven uncles. So for me, like my only hustle was men. You know, so I got the dope dealer man, and that was what I did. That was my hustle. That's how I got high. First, I was the girl that kept the money and the dope, you know what I mean, with Mr. Big Dope Man, and then I, you know, kind of came down the rung a little bit, and I was like the girl that kind of kept some of the dope, you know, couldn't be trusted with the money. You know what I mean? And it was like I was holding the gun, so if the police came, guess who was going to get nabbed? You know what I mean? And then it got down the rung a little bit more, and I was the girl with the dope dealer who was, like, kicking my ass for stealing his dope. You know, because he didn't have enough that I could steal some, and he didn't notice. And I had come down the rung, and he was like the nickel and dime dope dealer that you could page at 4 a.m., and he would deliver. You know, and my story was I stole the dope, you know, this was just like this. I would fuck him, put him to sleep, steal the dope, get my ass kicked, and it was a never-ending cycle for me. And I remember in the end, close to the end, when I was sitting in a dope house because that had become my home. I couldn't leave. You know, so the other thing that I did was I rented apartments for them so they could sell dope out the window. And I remember sitting in the crack house because that I couldn't leave and thinking, what had I done, God, that was so fucking awful that I could be living this life now? Because I couldn't even go home anymore. I couldn't. I used to be able to, like, turn it off and go home and spend, like, the holiday with my family. But that shit ended. You know, I couldn't leave. Thanksgiving, the best I could do was call and say, I'm in Florida. You know, I hadn't been to Florida in years, but I had to make some shit up as to why I wasn't coming home. You know, and in the end, I wasn't carrying my ID anymore because I didn't want anybody to call my mother when they found my body, because I had put her through that much shit already. You know, in my using, in my addiction, I had put my hands around my mother's throat. I'm talking about godless now. I'm talking about, you know what, I wish you were dead. I hate you. And thankfully today my mother is one of my best friends, you know, and that's a process of recovery for me. But what happened was that first place where I sat and I said, you know, I don't understand what I did, God. What could I have done that you could let this happen to me? I can't stop. I can't leave. It didn't matter that the police had taken me to Inglewood Jail in a T-shirt. A T-shirt. Thank God it was long. A T-shirt and some shoes. That shit didn't matter. It didn't matter that I was shot and that I was in the hospital getting stitched up. You know, that didn't matter. I couldn't understand how I couldn't stop, no matter what had happened, when they were stitching up my knee from a bullet wound. Why wasn't that enough? All I could think about was, oh, my God, my pipe and my dope are under the towels in the linen closet, and I hope he doesn't find it before I get home. Like, I couldn't understand that. And in my addiction, when I was raped by people I knew at gunpoint, and I cried out for the one God that I knew, he didn't show up, and I didn't understand. So when I got here, when I surrendered, after treatment I left, because that was, I didn't quite think I fit in there, you know, so I left treatment, but they had planted a seed about, you know, 12-step recovery and Narcotics Anonymous for me, and when on my last run, I was in Southern California, and I was in this place called the Jungle in L.A., and there's this alley called Sherm Alley, and it's like, you know, the one-stop shopping. You can just go down the alley and get whatever you want. And it was 4 a.m., and it was raining, and I had $8, and nobody was out. The dope man was gone home. The dogs were gone home. Everybody was gone home. And for the first time, I had this thought, what if I die here? Nobody will know. And for the first time, I didn't want to be Jane Doe. I just really wanted to be okay. So I reached into my back pocket and I pulled out the numbers of the guys in NA whose numbers I had kept and called them. You know, I called one of the guys and he called a woman and they made a 12-step call and I'm a direct result of a 12-step call in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and when I got clean, man, I knew I had a God. I had a higher power. I knew a higher power. I didn't have a conscious relationship with one and I certainly didn't know that I deserved the love of a higher power. Because all I knew was that God was working for other people, but I just did not deserve it. I wasn't worthy. I had done something so terrible, maybe in a past life, maybe in my childhood, maybe it's some shit I did when my grandmother wasn't looking. I don't know what it was, but I had done something so awful that I did not deserve to have the joy that I saw in your faces, to have the joy that I saw in other people's lives, to have the life I saw my sister living, or my brother, or my cousins. Why did I have to be the crackhead? You know, what the fuck? Couldn't they, you know, and it's not that I wanted it to be anybody else, but it's like, how come I'm the only crackhead? You know, I didn't know that. I didn't understand. I had done something awful. So my relationship with God was, yeah, I know you're there. You know, but I doubt seriously, I'm going to beg you to help me, but I doubt seriously that you're going to show up. And although I never said it out loud, it was always in the back of my mind. I know good shit is going to happen for other people, but it's not going to happen for me. And what happened for me is that the first place that I was really introduced to the idea that I could get a higher power that I could maybe get some help, that maybe this higher power thing that you all were talking about would work for me, was in the second step. Because, you know, all I needed to do there was to just come to believe that a power greater than myself could, you know, and I held on to that could. That means that there's a possibility for me. You know, and in my recovery, man, I'm telling you, you took my dope, but my shit was off the hook. You know, and I come from that overachieving family. So on my fifth day clean, I got a coffee commitment. And I was really grateful because, you know, people like kind of nurtured me and nudged me along in that recovery process. And they helped me to be of service. But I did what I was told. I got a sponsor. I mean, and I got a sponsor that I was attracted to. She was married to Mr. Dope Man, which made her Mrs. Dope, Mr. N.A., which made, you know, her Mrs. N.A. And then I was like Junior Miss, because I was her sponsee, right? That's what I was attracted to. When I got clean, I was attracted to the people that had the crowds around them, the people that were on the speaking circuit, the people who everybody knew their name. And I just kind of hung out in her wake, man, and everywhere she went, I went. And my claim to fame was that I was so-and-so sponsee. So people knew me because I was always with them. You know, and that's how I got plugged in. And, man, whatever works for you to get plugged in, just do it. Just get plugged in. You know, and that's what I did. And so for a long time in my second step process, I was taught that a power greater than myself could be anything. When I was new in recovery, sometimes it was the little white booklet that I kept in my purse. And then I kept it in my backpack when I went to school because I started going to school with 6 months clean, overachiever. And, you know, I would pull it out sometimes. I would be at school, right, with these young girls who had just come straight from high school into college, and I hadn't been in school in, like, 10 years. And they would be doing, you know, talking about algebra and like, oh, my God, it's so easy. And I was like, I hate that bitch. You know what I mean? And people would tell me, get your white, they would say, read your white book. So at that time, it was 10 cents to make a phone call. And you know what? That 10 cents in that phone call to another addict in the middle of my school day was a power greater than myself. Because I would reach out and get that therapeutic value, and I would call and say, I can't do this. And I would be in tears because I was inadequate. I felt inadequate. I didn't know anything but inadequacy because something was wrong with me, the only crackhead in my family. While everybody else was moving on with successful, productive lives, my whole life was about getting and using and finding new ways and being the dope dealer's girlfriend. You know, that was the sum total of who I was. You know, so when I'm sitting in class and these people are like spouting out the answers, man, and I'm freaking out, my power greater than myself was another recovering addict that I could call and say, I can't do this anymore. And they would say, yes, you can. Just get out the way and go like you go to the area meeting, because by this point now I was a GSR, and take notes. Like you take notes, because you know how you have to take notes, because if you go back to your home group and you don't have the right shit to report, you know, somebody else was at the meeting and they're like, well, what about this? Why aren't you talking about, you know, this motion that's on the floor? That's how it was in my area. So I took very copious notes, man. And so I took that behavior into my education process. And I took that second step higher power and I came, you know, really and embraced the knowledge that, you know what, this higher power could restore me to sanity. And then when I got to my third step is where they told me in this literature that my higher power was God. And I make no bones about it. I don't stand at this podium or anywhere else and share with anybody about recovery and say that my higher power, who I choose to call God. Because it doesn't say that in my literature. In my literature, it says, everything that I've read, it says, you know, we come to believe in a higher power. You know, it says that, and we make a decision to put that higher power, and I'm going to read it because it's in the step, man. It says that we make a decision. We put our belief into a higher power, into action, and we make that decision to turn our will and our lives over to God. So it's not like a doorknob or like a toilet or like you're this or you're that or any other of the bullshit that we try to make up. I mean, you know, if that helps you to stay, bless you. But please understand that we're talking about the higher power that's God. The good news is you can decide what your God is going to be like. You can decide what your relationship with God is going to be like because it gives you that freedom in the third step. And the thing that I had to get rid of was my religious God, right? Because I grew up in a Catholic church. I grew up with guilt, guilt, shame, confession, absolution, you know, and all kinds of crazy shit. So it was like God was always watching, even when I was thinking. Thinking was a sin, and I mean, it was just, I was fucked up. Because as an overachiever, I overanalyzed everything. So if I woke up and a thought ran through my mind, man, I knew God was writing it down. You know, ooh, lust. You know what I mean? Ooh, greed. You know, and so I had that fearful thing always about my relationship with God. And then I had this God on the mountaintop that, you know, was going to sit on a throne. And, you know, God was going to send me to purgatory. And here's what happened for me. Purgatory in the Catholic Church is that place where you go to be cleansed by fire before you can go to heaven. And what happened for me was that I thought that I had racked up so much shit that I was never going to get out of purgatory. I was going to be there for a long ass time. And I was like, what the fuck? Another 20 years is not going to do me any harm. So I'll just do what I want. You know, and I'm telling you, I carried that stuff. You know, I carried that stuff. But in the third step, you said, loving, caring, higher power, that's all that matters. And then people started to walk with me and teach me things. Like my friend Daryl in San Fernando Valley, he's a gay man. And when I got clean, I come from a very homophobic society. I come from a very homophobic country. Okay, it's like homo hatred. All right. And when I got clean, Daryl and I would have debates about, you know, a higher power and how could you like live like this? And I was like, but that's a sin in God's eyes and blah, blah, blah. You know, my old belief bullshit. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, with all the shit that you did out there, and with all the shit that you're doing now in recovery, if your God can love you and let you off the hook, how come, and love you exactly how you are, how come that same God can't love me exactly how I am? And that opened up a whole new world for me. Because really, I got a whole bunch of friends. I got like experience and exposure to a whole group of people that I would never have opened myself up if I hadn't started that process, you know. And so what happened for me was in my journey, you know, I started to understand. But my behavior was still with me. And I was saying I was learning, but I hadn't put a whole bunch of my shit down, right? So in early recovery, you know, my thing was another person's man. And it was on varying levels, you know, and I learned a lot about it. And the primary reason why I was there was because, well, there were two. It was twofold. The first thing was that I didn't think that I deserved to be loved completely by one person. I didn't think I deserved that love. So whatever he was willing to give me, I was willing to take. So, you know, in the morning, just like you're going to the dope man. He called me at 2 o'clock after he dropped his girlfriend off at home and say, you coming over? You know, the being always ready with the packed bag in the trunk. You know, just like the dope days. You know, always ready to go. If somebody came with some shit, you could go with them. You know, and that was my reality in recovery. Clean. Clean, man. And I was in pain, and I kept praying, and I was like, God, please help me. Please make it stop. And it got worse. It got worse, and my behavior got worse. Then she found out that I was involved with her man. And then, like, a whole area of women got pissed off at me, you know, because they had been around, and they were the, like, Mr. and Mrs. N.A. in their area. And when they found, people found out, man, a whole area of women were like, that's her, you know. And there were meetings that when I went to, if I had the courage to go, man, I had to take people with me. And there were meetings that I couldn't go to because I would run across that woman and her crew. And there were a whole bunch of people that I harmed along the way. You see, because the first fold is that I was selfish and self-obsessed, you know, the very core of our disease, the disease of self-obsession, you know. And it was all about me, and I wasn't thinking about all the people that I was hurting, you know. But the pain got greater. And then I had got to the place where I was like, God, please take him out of my life. And I would be at my girlfriend's apartment, man, curled up on the floor in tears, begging God to please take this man out of my life. And God was like, you got to do some work. You know, you have to do some work. You have to be willing. You know, and I was in my process. I was in my fourth and fifth step, man. And in my fourth step process, what I learned was my MO was fear. This is the other part of the reason why I was there. Fear of commitment. So see, as long as I was involved with someone who was emotionally unavailable and physically unavailable, I only had to put this much of myself into the relationship. I didn't have to go all the way, so it was good. It was easy. I didn't have to be with the 24/7 thing and he was really my man and all that shit. We could just go out, have a good time, and leave all the other stuff behind. But the other stuff caught up with my ass anyway. You know, and in the sixth step, man, I had to really, really start to take a look at what my character defects were. And one of my character defects was really just fear. Just fear. And the way I lived out my fear in that particular relationship was that I was caught up. I was afraid to be alone. I was afraid that nobody else wanted me. Okay? I was afraid that I wasn't deserving. And so I grabbed onto whatever was willing to pay attention to me. And that's what I did. You know, and, you know, through God's grace and mercy, you know, and through the process of these steps, I was able to really, really take a look at the fear, you know. And my sponsor taught me that fear is the core of all my character defects. So I can call it all the kind of sexy stuff you want. You can call it, you know, all that stuff. You know, you go to meetings and they have the list on the wall and all of that. You can call it anything you want, but the foundation of whatever it is fear. You are afraid. And in the seven-step process, man, which is where the higher power comes back in, I had to, like, surrender those shortcomings and those character defects to my higher power, to my God, the God that I understood. And I had to trust that by this point, my understanding of God was of such that God was going to remove those character defects. And I was just going to have to get out of the way. And, you know, I played with that because I was like, well, I like some of those. You know, I like that I'm a bitch. You know, that was one of those things, afraid of people. So if I could be a bitch and keep you away from me, you understand what I'm saying? Then I wouldn't have to deal. I wouldn't have to have the rejection, fear. I wouldn't have you find out who I really am, that I'm really kind of crazy and, you know, a little nuts, fear. I wouldn't want you to know that I'm, you know, I got some issues. And if you find out about them that, you know, I'm a snob. I didn't want you to know that. I really am. I'm a snob, and that's like my truth, you know, and I have to work every day to not fall back into that behavior. But under the seventh step, man, it says in the seventh step that we humbly ask our higher power to remove those character defects and shortcomings. And the shortcomings for me is what I do behind the fear. You know, it's like I'm afraid that my needs won't be met. I'm afraid I won't have enough. I start hoarding shit. I start stealing. You know, I break out in shit that don't belong to me. You know, because I'm just not sure that God is going to work. I start saying, well, we can't do that. And I start living in this place where nothing that I have is enough because I'm afraid. You know, and I get caught up. So when I just get humble and look at my story and look at how far I have been brought in this process of recovery, what happens for me is that I really get an opportunity. I just really get an opportunity to have God work in my life. You know, and my relationship is just building with God, and it's just building, right? And so through the process of having those character defects removed, I was able to stop sleeping with that man. It was a journey, because I'm not talking about 6 months. I'm talking about 3 years. Okay, in recovery, I'm talking about a long amount of time I was sneaking and creeping with this woman's man. And it was not any joke for me. It was like, it got more and more painful. And I was like, God, please. And it's like, I did geographics. I moved across country. I moved from California to Washington, D.C. And I got a couple of days clean. And so, like, I got to this place where I had, like, 30 days, 35, 40 days clean of this man, right? 60 days. And then he called and said, I miss you. And I said, me too, you know. And he said, I'm coming to see you. And I said, okay. Didn't think about it. It was just like when you know how people call and you have said you're not going to use tonight because you don't have, you know, you're going to keep this money because you want to buy these things for your house. You need a new jacket, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And then somebody calls and they're like, I'm coming over. I got some money. I got a 50. And you're like, cool, come on. Don't even think about it. All the shit you said you weren't going to do, out the window, didn't even pop up. You know, and I said, okay, and he came. He came from across the country, man. And the closer he got, when he called me with his from the rental car to say he was getting closer to my apartment, the sicker I got inside. And Helen was sharing about how you can't do shit, you know, anymore because you feel, when you're not acting spiritually, you start to feel bad, man. And when I first got clean, people would talk about how the road narrows, and my analytical ass would say things like, no, it doesn't. Recovery opens up more options, so the road widens. The road narrows, okay, because there's shit you cannot do anymore. It's just like all your options are, like, eliminated. You know, all that sneaky shit, out the window. Can't do that no more because you'll be fucked up, you know. And I'd be like, you know, what the fuck? My conscience. I didn't have one. I liked when I didn't have one, or I could shut it off. You know what I mean? Because I could do dirty shit. And this man was coming, and I was just in tears, man. And when he got to my apartment, and he buzzed, and I buzzed him up, and he walked in the door, I was like, oh, God. You know, but right before he had come, I got on my knees, and I said, God, please, whatever it is that I need to learn out of this thing, please let me learn it. And when I learn it, just give me the courage to follow through. Because we had broken up many times. Don't call me. You know, we did the game. I would call and hang up, like after the beep. So he would know that I called, you know, and hang up. And just stupid shit. You know, you call and he'd say hello, and I don't say anything. Hello? Nothing. And then I'd hang up. And then he called me back and, like, you know, 10 minutes later, did you call me? You know? And that was like that bullshit game. But this time, I was ready. This time, I was like, God, please remove this man. Remove this behavior, whatever it is. Here's my seventh step now. Again. Please take it. All the shit that I'm afraid of, that I'm holding on to, all the shit that I haven't learned because I have closed my eyes to those lessons, just open my eyes and help me. You know? And he came through the door, and I was crying, and he thought I was that happy to see him, but really I was crying because of all the shit that I was going through, you know? And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And so we had this ongoing dialogue for 2 days, you know, because he was there, and I couldn't, like, get rid of him. And, you know, because I was still in, I didn't have the confidence thing going on yet. And we talked it through, man. And when it ended, I had the courage. When it ended, it was effortless. When it ended and I said no, no was no. And no wasn't call me when you get home. And when he called, I didn't answer my phone. You know, and he would leave messages and I wouldn't return the call. You know, and then one day I stopped. I was like, I can't be a prisoner in my own home because I would have to, the phone would ring and I would stand over the answering machine to hear who it was before I'd pick up the phone. And I was like, fuck, I'm a prisoner. And I called him up and I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. Stop calling me. Okay, harassing somebody, and I got all, you know, intellectual. Harassing somebody on the phone is a federal crime, and I will report you, you know. And I just went there, because part of my story was part of the reason why I was here, right, in Washington, was having gone through college and graduated, I was here to go to law school. So now I was whipping the law out, right, and I was all serious. And he really, you know, so he FedExed me this letter and blah, blah, blah. But the process had taken hold. And you know how they say, if you don't work the steps will work you? All I had to do was surrender in that seven-step process, man, and God just kind of, like, did it. And it was done. And then I had the opportunity to go in the eighth step and make a list, you know, and looked at all the people that I had harmed in that particular place, in that area of my life. My parents, who I had brought this man into our lives, into my family's lives. That man was not real. He was a fucking illusion. But if you look through, because he was involved with somebody, it wasn't real. You know what I mean? And if you look through, if you look in my sister's wedding pictures, the man is there. And I'm like, damn, disease right in your face, right? Because really and truly, he wasn't real. And I brought this illusion around. And my parents thought that maybe this was something. And, you know, I was involved with this man. He was around for 3 years. He was there for some events. You know what I mean? And then they found out he wasn't real either, you know, and it broke their hearts. It hurt them. It hurt my daddy that his baby was caught up in a situation where, you know what, she wasn't being treated as she deserved. Broke his heart. So he was on my eight-step list. You know, my mother, my family, my sister, the woman who, although, you know, I'm not taking responsibility for her part because she knew about me for a long time, you know, and she chose to be in the game. But my part was that I caused her ongoing harm. And I took response and I put her on my list. And I was able, through the 9-step process, to just like make amends in those areas, man, with that particular thing. I was able to like do things anonymously for that woman without it being a big deal. I was able to follow my sponsor's direction. You know, and last year, through the grace of God at the World Convention, I was able to walk up to her and look her in the eyes and make direct amends and say, I am so sorry for the part that I caused, the harm that I caused, and the part that I played, and I carry you in my heart, you know? And so I kind of did that. And, you know, fast forwarding through my life, man, I get to the 11th step, you know, on one of my journeys through the steps, right, because it's a continual process, and I start to have this real tight relationship with God, you know, and then, you know, in the process, I meet a man that's wonderful, and we fall in love, and we are now there in that committed relationship thing that I was talking about. I didn't want the good times, the bad times, we're there, you know, and we're married, and we have a house, and we're doing all this stuff, man, and then life was showing up. You know, I finished law school and I did all that stuff and I got all my degrees and all that stuff was going on. And life was showing up. You know, and early last year, man, my sponsee, my baby, died. And I had to really just clean on, like, out of some just some bizarre off the wall shit. You know, and I had to plug into a power greater than myself. And I had to hold on. And then during that time, we found out that we were pregnant. And so I had grief and I had joy, you know, and I was holding on because, you know, when emotions start to whip your ass and stir up in your life, shit can get crazy. You can break out in shopping too much, eating too much, all that kind of shit and putting yourself in danger, you know. And through the year, man, you know, I prepared and I got myself ready to be a mother and we did all that stuff. And on my due date, we went to the hospital to deliver my baby. You know, when we got there, there was no heartbeat. I had carried a child for 9 months, and I had done everything they told me to do because I'm anal retentive, you know, and I had a checklist of what I'm supposed to do and not do, and I followed that, and I hung on to that, man. And they told me that there was no heartbeat. And I can't even tell you, you know that shit you see in the movies when, like, it fades away, everybody fades away, and you're just laying there, like, the person that they're focused on, it's silence, people's voices, mouths are moving, everything's gone. All that shit was real for me. And all I could feel at the time was two things, you know, concern for my husband. I was like, how am I, because he was registering me, he was filling out the papers. And all I could think was, how am I going to tell him? I hadn't had unconditional love like that before. You know, and all I could think was, how was I going to tell my mother? And I laid in that bed, and they did everything, and the doctors did everything, and there was nothing that could be done, man. And then they told us that we had to stay the night and go through the whole process of giving birth, delivering, because it wasn't birth, because birth brings life, so just delivering. You know, and then I'm laying in bed one more time thinking, how come I can't get shit? How come it can't fucking work out for me? How could I come all this way and then have it just taken away, God? What are you doing? Why didn't you let me know earlier so I wouldn't have all these fucking hopes? Why didn't you let me know so I wouldn't put a fucking nursery together and just like have this flurry of activity, you know, around expecting new life in my house? Why would you do that? You know, and we laid up all night, and I mean, I dozed on and off, but we talked it through, and then we like reached out into the higher power. And you know what? When I asked those questions, what I need to tell you is that very quietly, God whispered in my heart, it's going to be okay. And God told me exactly what I needed to do. And in the 11th step, it talks about how your will and your higher power's will becomes one. And let me tell you, man, that shit is real. Because I knew intuitively what I needed to do to take care of myself and my husband and the people that I love. I knew intuitively that I couldn't handle any visitors. I knew intuitively who needed to be called. I knew intuitively who we needed to call on to say, can you come to the hospital? And I knew exactly what I needed, even though everybody had their own kind of solution. You know, one of the hardest things for me, and I'm going to tell you how love and connection works for us. One of the hardest fucking things for me to do was to have my husband call my friend who had just lost his son and say to him, we have another death. You know, it was so fucking hard, you know, because we're connected by spirit and love, man. And it was like, how do I, this pain is just fucking unending. It's never ending. And when is it going to fucking stop? You know, and God just kept saying it's going to be okay. And I just had to trust that, you know, everything that was happening in my life was happening for the highest good of all concerned. And that was some hard shit to hold on to because I had been preaching that for a long time. And now it was my opportunity to know that whatever was going on with this situation was going to be our highest good. Out of this process, now that I'm a little bit further on the other side, I had been praying for a long time for a closer relationship with my higher power, my God. I have that. I have a closer bond with my husband. And it doesn't mean that I don't miss, that we don't miss what we could have had. But with gratitude, man, I'm grateful for what we have now. We survived that horrible loss. And you know how when you get clean, they say, you know, think of what your reservations are and what could cause you to use and, you know, get rid of it. When I thought of what could cause me to get loaded, I didn't think about that. That was like the farthest shit from my mind. Like, that's not real. And, you know, one more time I was feeling like in the pity pot because the women in my family, especially on my mama's side, are fertile. They're like popping babies left and right. And then one more time I'm like, why me? You know, and so I go back to that place where I'm damaged and shit. You know, something's wrong with me, the same place where I was when I was the only crackhead. And I had to reconstruct the step process and get back to my 11th step to understand that really and truly, Diane, if you just hold on, it's going to be okay. You know, and I'm here to just report that, you know, my higher power has shown up for me. And when I was thinking about higher powered, I was thinking about things like, you know, when you look and you see like buses and it says this, you know, like the natural gas power or this, and you see something that's diesel powered. And what I recognize, man, is that being higher powered for me is my constant source of fuel. It's what keeps me going every day. And it talks about it in our literature where it says in our third step, you know, that once we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a loving God as we understand him, what happens is in the rest of the steps, we clear out the wreckage. We clear out the stuff that blocks us from God. And thank God I had been in the step process all the time. All the time, even when I was acting stupid and on, you know, with the other woman's man and all that crazy shit that I was doing. Thank God I was applying that process and working through the steps because stuff got cleaned out. And when I really, really, really needed my higher power, it was effortless. You know, so what I know now today from my own experience is that God shows up for me all the time. All I have to do is acknowledge the source. I am higher powered whether I'm actively being higher powered or not. You know, even when I'm acting contrary to the shit that I preach, even when my behavior says, yeah, I really don't believe in that NA thing. You know, even when I'm doing that, my God is still there. My higher power is still there. You know, and most recently, we've had to deal with some more grief. You know, and a friend of mine died in the hospital a couple months ago. And it's been such a process for us to deal with all this loss, man. Just continual. But then in the middle of the loss, there's all this joy. You know, there's all this beauty. There's this love of a whole bunch of people who cares for someone coming together and sharing love. There's this fellowship, man, that just kind of like circled. You know how people circle the wagons? They circled that man's child. And with loving protection, they were there for the child and the mother. You know, and when you stand and you watch that stuff, When you stand and you see that love, and you see God shining through the faces of every member, you got to know there's a higher power. You know, and if you stay here, I'm here to tell you that if you stay here long enough, you will get to recognize where and how exactly it is that you are higher powered. You know, and if you're new, I want to tell you that if you just don't use it and you keep coming back, everything else will work itself out because you'll get a sponsor because everybody else will have one. And you'll work the steps because everybody else is working the steps. And it will unfold in your life. And you will be amazed when you stand and you look back over the 5 years or the 6 years, in my case, 11, and you look at who you are today and you're a completely different human being. So with that, I just want to say thanks for letting me share.
I want to thank Diane for sharing. Thank you so much. Thank you. Really good. Thank you. What we have? We have a couple of minutes left. If someone wants to come up to the mic and share. Limit yourself to, I don't know, a minute or two. Anyone?
Thank you for the watch.
That was great.
Okay, come on.
Hi, family. My name is Martin Griffith, recovering addict. First and foremost, I'd like to thank God for my understanding for allowing me to be here clean today. And also, like to thank God for allowing me to be teachable today. And for that, I'm truly grateful. I'm grateful to be here. I wasn't sure which meeting I should make, but I know I was in the right place. And so I'd like to thank these two young ladies for sharing their experience, strength, and hope on a higher power. And I think it's done brilliantly. It's a 1-2 punch on a higher power, I'm God of your understanding. And I also like to say that I can identify when she talks about that even when God is not in my life, when I don't feel God is there, and I'm acting out on my defects, I know he's there because of step three in my life. And, you know, I came up with that, you know. And to hear it again, you know, it just really stands clear that, you know, because like I've been up all night at the marathon meetings and kind of sort of, you know, not doing the right thing, you know, with a newcomer and my friend of mine, we were hanging out. We went to the sunrise meeting, and I sat there, and I said, I saw the big picture. As soon as that sunrise, I knew why I was in this young lady's life, man. And it was to nurture her, man, and show her how it is to be, you know, in this room as Narcotics Anonymous, you know. You know, because, you know, a 13-step is, I know what a 13-step is. Is throwing that knowledge on her to impress. Do you understand? And it worked out perfectly, man. It worked out perfectly. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Is that it? Oh, are you coming up to share? Got 1 minute.
I'm an addict. My name is Brian. I was just listening to these ladies speak, and I was thinking, I used to have conversations with people, you know, we'd argue about the Bible and, you know, Moses talked to God and all these people talked to God and, you know, you don't hear people, you know, how come God doesn't talk to people anymore? But it was by coming to Narcotics Anonymous that I had learned to hear God. Like, you know, I know God talks to me through people.
Yes.
And, but I've learned to identify that now and you know, just the example is when people who don't know each other, but they know me and they're in the program and they're giving me the same information, that's probably God talking to me. And I've learned to recognize that, and that's been a tremendous help in my life. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
That's it. What else we do? Do we close? I don't know.
Just pray out.
It will be nice.